From KCRW, I'm Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to Good Food. And just in time for Halloween, we bring you recipes for murder. It's the title of Karen Pierce's new cookbook, inspired by the work of Dame Agatha Christie, the master of the detective novel, and who, according to the author's website, has been outsold only by Shakespeare and the Bible. Everyone loves a whodunit, especially me, and Karen Pierce has a particular taste for the genre. In Recipes for Murder, she offers us a recipe for each of Christie's works. Hi, Karen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
How deeply rooted is your love of Agatha Christie?
It goes way back. I was maybe 10 or 11 when I first discovered an Agatha Christie paperback on my grandmother's bedside table. And having finished read all the Trixie Beldens and all the Nancy Drews, I dove in and, never really looked back. In my 20s, I started collecting them feverishly from secondhand bookstores. And they were just always my comfort, like, if things had gone wrong, I'd get in the bathtub and read an Agatha Christie.
Yeah, it's very comforting, despite the horror and violence in between. What inspired you to research and write a recipe for each of her works?
Well, the truth is that I was really looking for the Agatha Christie cookbook, and I couldn't find one. And I really don't know what gave me the chutzpah to say I could do it myself, but I just started writing. I wondered what it would look like. And eventually I came to the idea that it would really be about her books. It would be how she used food in the books and explain some of those really English things that most of us in the rest of the world don't know about, or stuff that's really timely that is no longer done. So I just thought it would be great fun to look at it. And that's what I did. I started with the Mysterious to Ferret Styles and went through each and every book.
Christie herself is so often conflated with Miss Marple.
Mm.
And we have this image of her being such a proper and sometimes prim woman. But she had this sort of love of cream that I think is so odd and quirky that it says a lot about her. Could you share this bizarre... this bizarre habit she had?
Well, first, I would say that Christie herself was much more in tune with Ariadne Oliver than Miss Marple. Miss Marple was really based on Agatha's aunts and grandmothers. She was a pretty freewheeling young woman. I mean, she learned to surf. She was one of the first people standing up and surfing. But yeah, the cream. She comes by it honestly. She's from Devon, the land of cream tea, and probably some of the best cream in England is from Devon. So I guess as a young girl, she started drinking it in a cup, and it's called a cup of neat cream. Now, I guess she never really stopped because she never drank alcohol. And so any kind of a celebration, she'd have a cup of neat cream. So I don't think she had it every day, but that was her treat.
I love that so much. So on a dare from her sister, Christie wrote and published her first novel, The Mysterious Affair at Styles. She was 26 years old and had had a career as a nurse, which gave her an insight to medicine and poisons. When do we first start to see food figuring prominently in her work?
Well, in that first one, The Mysterious Affair at Styles, they talk about going in and out for meals, but really coffee and cocoa are the only two that really star. But if you look at the second novel, The Secret Adversary, Tommy and Tuppence talk about food a lot. They're there. They're two young people. They're totally broke after the war. They can hardly scrape enough money to have tea and toast at their neighborhood cafe. And, you know, they reminisce about all the great foods they used to have back in the day. Anyway, they get a job. Tuppence finds, gets herself, I guess it's like 10 five-pound notes, which is a fortune. And they hot-foot it over to the Savoy Hotel or the Ritz or whatever it is. And Tuppence cannot wait to order all her special foods. So that's really the beginning of Christy using food to set the time, set the tone, and really describe who these characters are.
How does she use food as a device to advance plot and define characters like the infamous Hercule Poirot? He was what we would now call a foodie. Is there a book where his love of food and ability to cook comes to the foreground more than in others?
Well, there's the classic one where he actually teaches his hostess how to make an omelet. He has, in Mrs. McGinty's Dead, he's been dragged into a murder. The person has already been accused. One of his friends wants him to look into it. So he goes to this tiny town. He ends up staying in a guest house where they don't know how to keep a guest house. They have no idea what they're doing. And the food is atrocious. And Poirot can only hold his head in his hands in despair. But as he says by the end of the book, he has made friends with him. He's bought Maureen a cookery book so she can learn some new recipes. He's taught her how to make his omelet. And fast forward a bit to another book called Cat Among the Pigeons. And young Julia Upjohn says to him, "Oh, my aunt makes a smashing omelet." And it's the same woman. And of course, Poirot says, "Well, then I have not lived in vain."
So great. So let's talk about Halloween. Could you suggest a menu for a Halloween-themed dinner and the stories that inspired each course?
Yes. We have the Jack-o'-lantern deviled eggs, which is from the Halloween party mystery, which is known as A Haunting in Venice these days. But in that mystery, there's actually a Halloween party for teenagers, and there's a buffet of sweet and savory things. And so I chose the deviled eggs. I turned them into kind of little pumpkins and decorated them so they look like jack-o'-lanterns.
Oh, love that.
And then I thought, well, roast partridge. This is a September meal, Michaelmas. This is from one of the last stories, Nemesis, where she's reminiscing about her girlhood. So there's a lot of shooting of partridges in September and October in Devon, and they have a roast. And it just felt very fall, very, very Halloween, I think, to have a roast partridge. And then, of course, you have to have some potatoes. So I took that from And Then There Were None, which my recipe is how to do the perfect boiled potato. And I think there's just something spooky about And Then There Were None, no matter what you do. A very spooky story. And then to top it off, we have another delicious Death by Cake. Christy was inspired that cake. She had it at a friend's house. And that particular mystery is dedicated to those friends.
Well, thank you so much, Karen. What a fun book.
Well, thank you.
That was Karen Pierce with some Halloween inspiration. Her book is Recipes for Murder, 66 recipes that celebrate the mysteries of Agatha Christie. We've got recipes for each of these Halloween dishes she talked about on our website. It's all at kcrw.com/goodfood. And I know we're still in the spooky season, but Thanksgiving is around the corner. Don't let it creep up on you this year. Send me your questions. Are you in charge of a spread that needs to accommodate vegetarians, vegans, and omnivores? Or perhaps you're wondering how to reinvent your side dish game. This year, I'll be joined by cookbook author Nick Sharma, and together we will answer your questions and, of course, get you excited about what's possible in a Thanksgiving spread. You can email us at goodfood@kcrw.com, or you can DM us on Instagram. We're at @kcrwgoodfood. Coming up, it's back to the horror stories, and I wish I was talking about Halloween. Stay with us.